In the name of God, the Holy and Undivided Trinity. Over the course of my life as an ordained minister, I've had many experiences with mission statements. I've gone to congregations that had them. I have facilitated the process of writing mission statements in several places. Some of the mission statements were brilliant, guiding our life and witness, providing us with values and standards that held us accountable and kept us on track. Some of them were not so helpful. But when the bishop asked, we could always point to the frame copy on the wall and the text on the website and say, "Yes, sir, we've got a mission statement." Here at St. Andrew's, we have a mission statement. Allow me to read it to you. The Cathedral Parish of St. Andrew is the mother church of the Episcopal Diocese of Mississippi and the seat of its bishop. Living into our baptismal covenant, we promise to respect the dignity of every human being. We are a unifying center of authentic faith, diversity, intellectual discovery, and community leadership. Our theology supports the values of community, hospitality, education, pastoral care, evangelism, outreach, and resource development. These values undergird our mission, which is to provide an environment where everyone might know and experience the unconditional love of God in Jesus Christ. Shortly after I arrived in August of last year, I learned that the vestry felt that this mission statement needed updating and revising. Honestly, during the past year, it seems to me that the vestry and just about everybody else around here has been too busy engaging in the mission of the cathedral than to stop and write a succinct description of it. The vestry will eventually set aside time to draft a new mission statement. And in the meantime, we'll work with the one we have. Today's gospel is a good reminder that in addition to a mission statement, there is such a thing as a mission question. In fact, maybe mission questions should precede mission statements. Like a mission statement, a mission question can guide our lives. When we're looking at James and John in this scene from today's gospel, we can surmise the question that guides their lives, that leads them into this embarrassing attempt to curry favor with Jesus and ask for special treatment. Their mission question is, "What's in it for me?" Now, we have sympathy for these two Zebedee boys because we've seen how they left their fishing business and their father to follow Jesus. We've seen that they have sacrificed quite a lot to continue with Jesus down this road of discipleship. But today, we see that ugly question rearing its self-centered head. What's in it for me? The response of Jesus to their question is another question, and in the Gospels, whenever Jesus answers a question with a question, get ready. He's about to teach us something. And the question that he asks is one that one day would replace the question of the sons of Zebedee. In the Gospel account, we read, James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came forward to Jesus and said to him, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you." And Jesus said to them, "What is it you want me to do for you? What is it you want me to do for you?" Really, this is a question Jesus always asks. In fact, next week, we'll hear Jesus ask it again in the gospel when he'll ask a blind beggar, "What is it you want me to do for you?" And that blind man will ask for healing. This is Jesus' question for all who come to him. This is Jesus' open, vulnerable mission question, a question that guides his life of service, of his willingness to meet us where we are and permit us the freedom to tell him what we really want. Sometimes our questions are childish, like the question of James and John. And sometimes Jesus hears the honest requests of those who know that he is our only hope, requests for healing, forgiveness, a second or third or fourth chance, a chance to try again, a chance to come before Jesus empty-handed and, like that blind beggar, say, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." And Jesus responds, "What do you want me to do for you?" When the other disciples hear that James and John have put themselves above their peers, they run up to Jesus too. They're angry and they're mad. And they're mad not because they see that James and John have misunderstood. They're angry because they didn't think of it first. They're angry because they think of power the way the world thinks of power, as something that's yours if you take it. If you're the strongest or the swiftest, the most politically savvy, the most well-connected, the most affluent, they think there's only so much to go around, and those sneaky Zebedee brothers have gone and grabbed the power first. Jesus' strategy in his earthly ministry was to form a community of disciples. He did so in order to teach them, to shape them, to prepare them to carry on his mission after he was gone, to become his body. So Jesus seized upon this kerfuffle among his disciples and used it as an opportunity to help them see his way more clearly. Jesus called them and said to them, "You know that among the Gentiles, those whom they recognize as their rulers lord it over them, and their great ones are tyrants over them. But it is not so among you. But whoever wishes to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wishes to be first among you must be slave of all. For the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many." And that right there sums up the mission question of Jesus. What is it you want me to do for you? And that's the mission question you and I must learn to ask as we follow Jesus. Before we ever start composing a mission statement, we need to allow Jesus to transform our mission questions so that we are people who ask not, "What's in it for me?" but, "What is it you want me to do for you?" That question is a mark of discipleship. Rick Warren is the founder and pastor of Saddleback Valley Church in California. He's the author of several books, including The Purpose-Driven Life. In a television interview several years ago, he reflected upon how he and some other evangelical leaders had figured out how to use secular marketing principles to grow churches. They were very successful at it, and they've taught others how to use those principles to grow churches. But in this particular TV interview, he had a confession to make. He said, "On Sunday mornings, when I look out across my congregation, I see a lot of consumers, but very few disciples." You see, the question of the Zebedee brothers, "What's in it for me?" is the question of those who see their place in the church as consumers of Christianity. They think they're the customers. Disciples, on the other hand, ask, "What can I do for you?" Because they understand themselves as the church staff, and they devote themselves to the service of others. They come here week by week to receive divine resources, not just to be consoled, but in order to be renewed, refreshed, and refueled for their life of service in the mission field at our doorstep. They receive the sacrament in order to become a sacrament of God's love in a hurting world, a world that needs somebody who cares to say, What can I do for you? Amen.